Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
And you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crow and Cottages, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday at the same time from 4 to 5. Now, we'd love to hear from you during the show today, so please feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. The easiest way to get in touch is by text to 086 353 7782, or you can email us anytime during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, on the show today, it's a busy show. We'll be talking the usual food news. Mags will have some seasonal recipes for us. We'll remind you of some of the jobs to do in the garden around now a little later in the show. There's also the weekly nature notes, and Mags visits Butler House Garden in Kilkenny to enjoy an open-air concert there. A little later, we'll be joined on the phone by Kitty Scully to hear about a new garden festival in Cork, the Vox Pro Urban Garden Festival. A lot to get through today, Mags. How are you?
Yes, good, thank you.
Good. How was your week?
Slightly distracted from the garden by the Arts Festival, actually. There's so much going on in the city, it's really nice.
There's a lovely buzz around
town.
Yeah,
there's a lovely buzz, and there's something on, like, literally all day, every day. Huge variety of gigs and events and that, and exhibitions, so really nice, actually.
And it'll be another busy couple of weeks now, because we'll have the Heritage Week.
Heritage Week is kicking off this weekend.
Yeah, it's grown beyond a week now. It seems to be stretching out. Is it 11 days or something?
Yeah, but anyway. So I was actually just starting to not feel under pressure. Now you've actually brought up the pressure again.
Oh,
because
great.
I have to get ready for the Heritage Walk in Thomastown next weekend. So, but yeah, there's always something on.
Yeah.
And I ventured into the area of woofing. I know you know what that is, but it's young people, I suppose, who come to the country to work on farms or gardens and that, and in exchange for bed and board, they do work, they learn English, and they learn kind of about organic type gardening. So I had a woofer for a couple of days, which was interesting and great, actually. Really nice to have somebody who does a job that you don't actually have to do yourself.
So this is an organised scheme where kids, or, well, I suppose college-age kids.
College-age, yeah. Kind of, I don't know, it's from 18 upwards.
Right, okay. And they come from the abroad over to practice their English in a host family, supposedly learn about growing or producing food, and then they do a bit of work.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And so, what did you have your woofer do?
She did, well, I took her to the horse show for a day and stuff. So
that hardly counts as work.
No, that was her day off. So I thought then she was
started
set
with
up.
A day off. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
And
yeah.
Then, but she did lots of things. Like, she picked a pile of raspberries. She picked all of the cones from the ground and stuff for the winter. Then she did a huge amount of weeding in the garden. And she was German and quite meticulous. So that was really nice.
Nothing like a bit of racial stereotyping, but very meticulous and organised, was she?
Yes, she was.
Very good,
yes,
okay.
And a very pleasant girl, very nice as well. And she did a huge amount of work to the conservatory. So while she was all doing all of that, I got to do other stuff, actually, that's been on the list for years. So that was good, actually. So I've now signed up. She was kind of a trial and stuff. I've now signed up to get some more before
Woofers.
The winter and stuff. Yeah,
oh, very good.
Yeah.
And I find when you have somebody in to do some work with you, it kind of encourages you to get a bit stuck in as well. And with
you stay focused, actually.
That's
to
it.
Be honest,
that's the problem. So when I'm out at the garden in over at the cottages, I could have a guest come out and I have to chat to them. The phone could be ringing, new bookings coming in. I have the web stuff as well going on, so it's very hard to find 2 or 3 hours where you're uninterrupted.
It's impossible, actually.
But if you have somebody in and they're dedicated to it, it's amazing.
Or even if you've got to go away for an hour or something, the job doesn't end.
Yes.
So you come back and loads of progress has been made.
It's nice. So it's good for the spirit.
Oh, it was great. Mm. I kind of miss her, actually.
Already? She's only gone. Okay.
I suppose the weather is starting to change a little bit.
It is, but that woofing, just before we move on, is there a website that people can kind of go and check it out?
www.oof.ie, I think. There's an Irish version of it. You've got to go on to the Irish one and you can register. And take it from there.
Okay, so you register as a host and you describe where you are, and they get to pick. So it's kind of like a dating site, really, is it? They come on and check you out and you check them out and then you see if
you match. I haven't gotten to that stage. I've just registered, but they have to come back to you to tell you that you're okay to go ahead.
Okay.
So, and you can't do or see anything until that's been done. So I'm in that part of the phase.
Right, so wwoof.ie.
Yeah.
Check it out. Woof. Yeah. Okay, great.
And there's other organisations as well. Workaway is another one.
HelpX is another one.
That's another one, yeah. So there's a couple of different ones. But I know with Woof, they're insured. They pay a certain amount and you pay a certain amount, so they're covered by insurance when they arrive. So
it's kind of employer's liability type insurance.
Yeah.
That's something a lot of people wouldn't think about, actually.
Yeah.
So in case your woofer sticks a rake through their toes.
And these things do happen and stuff,
Well, worth checking out. I might look into that myself, actually. I'd love to have some free work done. And you just have to give them bed and board.
Just bed and board.
Right, okay.
And be nice to them. Like, I think if you're nice to them,
that's where I might fall down.
Yeah, I was incredibly nice, actually.
But I'll be starting with a day off out of Crowan Cottages, I can tell you. And what if they work slow then? Are you allowed to kind of whip them or?
No, you're not supposed to whip them at all, actually. Supposed to help and encourage them all the way. You're supposed to be very understanding if they're having a day.
Unproductive
day. I'm not sure it's for you, to be honest. But Workaway is a different kind of scheme, and that's for like skills. So you can go on to that, and if you're looking for a carpenter or a roofer or whatever, that might work better for you.
Oh God, I need some of that.
Yeah.
That's Workaway.
Workaway.
Oh, I could give somebody, I've often thought, I could give somebody a break in the cottages. So I've needed a carpenter now to help me repair the greenhouse for ages, and I just cannot get anybody. So if there was a carpenter out there who fancied a holiday in Kilkenny, give me a shout. You come down, bring the family for the weekend, give me half a day in the greenhouse, and the rest of it's for free. Like, that'd be an ideal little scheme, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Okay. That would. I have a friend who's taking a French couple, actually, for a couple of weeks under that scheme.
Workaway. Okay, we must check that out then. Great. Excellent.
They're not insured, though. Well, you've got your own insurance, it's fine.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, so what else? So you've got a woofer working on the place. You've been doing nothing. Oh, so with your feet up.
I've had a very busy. I have a very busy time at the moment. But the garden is going well, actually. And the new stuff that I planted there a couple of weeks ago and stuff is all coming along. And still loads of courgettes, loads of runner beans, loads of scallions, the beetroot's ready, loads of peas. Like, it's really weeks and weeks of loads of peas. And I think the courgettes are having kind of a second burst.
Yeah.
They kind of struggled earlier, but it was just enough. But now there's loads.
It's still reasonably warm. I know it's a bit chilly the last couple of days and it's felt a bit autumnal, but it's still in the high teens and there's a lot more water now. So grass has greened up. Mm. There's a second flush of grass. I saw some second cuts of silage being made yesterday. It feels a bit more harvesty now.
There was
a feast that we should have really mentioned on around the 1st of August called Lammas, which is one of the old Celtic festivals, and it's the kind of harvest festival. But at the start of August, it just didn't feel very harvesty. You know, things were still parched and so on. But now it's starting to feel like that harvest time for me, you know?
Yes, it is actually, isn't it?
Combine and harvesters about the place and all of that.
I kind of have that feeling of, you know, you need to hurry on and make sure you gather everything, and there's apples falling and pears, you know, so it is. And I've loads of raspberries, actually, so, and no woofer now to pick them for me. So I have to do them myself.
Get the next one in quick.
Yeah.
You'd be better organised next year with the woofers.
I'm going to kind of get them in stages and stuff. So I want some for September for certain jobs in mind, and then wait until maybe Easter and get some more in for the next lot of jobs. Well,
fantastic idea. Yeah. And the apples are, you mentioned apples there, they are falling off the trees now.
Yeah,
like what few apples there are on some of the varieties.
I have loads of apples.
But on some of the varieties, so there's four flowering groups of apple. So that's why if you have an apple tree, you have to have a partner apple tree from the same flowering group. And that's when they're in flower, because they need to pollinate each other. And of the four apple flowering groups, some are earlier and some are later.
Okay.
And of some of the groups, there's no apples on the trees. And then others are producing massive amounts of apples. And my biggest producer last year has half a dozen on it this year. And no joke, I must have gotten about three wheelbarrow fulls of apples from that tree last year. So if you're growing apple trees, it pays to have a variety of them so that you're never left without.
I'm kind of have to gather them up as well for the windfalls and that. They go into the pigs. Busy enough.
But the pigs will love that. Like, it's that time.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love actually being able to do that. It just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Stuff is lying on the ground. and it feeds. I did give them one courgette, got turned huge, so they got that today and stuff. They love it.
Yeah, they do. They're like munching away on the outside. Yeah.
And I know you and other people had problems with your pigs escaping in the during the hot weather.
No, I didn't.
Mine yesterday decided they want to be in a different field.
Oh no! Once they start that habit.
Yeah, once they start, that's it.
So you'll have that every day
and
now.
And today it was the same crack.
Yeah, once they get a taste for it. So is the electric fence up? Is it working?
I'd taken the electric fence down because I didn't need it. They hadn't moved for months and months.
You'll have to get it back up. Give them a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Sandy, who was mine, who was going to visit the neighbours all the time, and I actually think she was going in to eat the cat food outside the house. I know. But I think that's what she found. That's why she kept going back to that house.
Right.
Anyway, she's been best behaved now since the electric fence went back in.
Okay. I'm not sure that's considered best behaviour.
She shoves her sister. I've seen a sow shove piglets onto a fence before. But Sandy shoves her sister onto the fence to see if it's still working. Isn't that incredible?
That's not very nice. It's not really.
Sandy shoves the runt of a pig onto the fence. If she hears the crack, like, I won't go near that. And if there's no crack, okay, I'll be back in a minute. I'm going next door for the cat food.
Cat food. Oh, God. Can't wait to have that pork.
No, she'll be strictly vegetarian from now on. And only for home consumption. So there's, you've a range of delicious things here in front of me. There's some little buns. There's a ginormous jar of jam and some bread. So what have we got here?
This morning, I was looking for inspiration, to be honest, this morning. Sometimes I get it early in the week, but I was looking for it this morning. And I picked some blackberries. And everyone makes blackberry jam and everything, which I have some there. But then I decided to make either muffins or scones, and the kids voted for muffins. But they're not muffins, they're buns, because I have a huge objection to muffins. We don't need to eat anything that's the size of a muffin.
These are the size of a fairy cake.
They're a proper bun.
This is what I used to have when I was a kid.
This is what we all should be eating, that size. Yes. Not like something that's four times that size.
Yes.
That's enough in a muffin. Bun. Yes. So it is a blackberry, a blackberry bun. Isn't it lovely?
It looks absolutely lovely.
I think it looks perfect.
Yeah, it does. I'm going to have one, so will you talk while I eat?
You can have it. I'll go
through
the recipe.
You can't just have me look at these things. Really, really pretty.
So it's kind of a healthy enough, it's kind of like a breakfasty muffin. So there's blackberries and a little bit of vanilla, just for flavour and stuff. There's very little sugar in it.
Oh, that is so tasty.
It is nice, isn't it? And light and stuff. And the kids
and not sickeningly
them.
Sweet
not
at all.
Not sickeningly sweet in that. So there's 100 ml of milk, 100 ml of natural yoghurt, 75 ml of sunflower oil, a teaspoon of vanilla extract, and then 225 grams of plain flour, 3 teaspoons, I put a little bit less, just a little bit less than 3 teaspoons of baking powder, some salt, and then 100 grams of wholemeal flour. I actually used sprouted grain, which is nice, and 100 grams of brown sugar. So in another cake recipe of that quantity of flour, you'd often have like 225 grams of sugar. So there's a lot less sugar, but you don't need it. And then I put a couple of handfuls of blackberries in. So whisked up all the wet ingredients, folded in the flour and the sugar, and then at the very end, just gently folded in the blackberries, popped them into little bun cases and into the oven. Easy peasy.
They wouldn't
and
take long
stuff.
In the oven now, would they?
About 10, 15 minutes.
Really tasty.
Maybe 15 minutes, sorry.
And there's actually a text in there from Anne, and Anne is saying you're going too fast with the recipe. But luckily, Anne, you don't have to pay attention to it now, because the recipes are all up on thekitchengarden.ie every week, where we podcast the show.
I will type it up this evening.
And the recipes are all up there. So last week's recipes are up there. So Anne, stop giving out the bags now, and just visit thekitchengarden.ie.
Or if you have a muffin bun recipe that you like, just put the blackberries and a little bit of vanilla into it instead of whatever else you were using, and it's perfectly fine. So I'm going to make those. There's loads of blackberries this year, and I'll put them in the freezer, and the kids can take them to school during the winter.
That's a brilliant idea. Yeah, they do freeze really well. Pastry freezes really well. Like you get a little taste of summer or autumn
throughout
the winter.
Blackcurrants are very, blackberries, sorry, are very good for you. There's lots of vitamin C and fibre in that, and they're free, and there's gazillions of them sitting around the place.
Have you been out picking?
Yeah. Chapel Hill, where I live, seems to be like a wash with them, and they're huge. I don't know if they're indigenous to Chapel Hill, I'm not sure, but they're really big.
Well, there are lots and lots of varieties of blackberry, and unfortunately the ones that I predominantly have are the little small ones, which are fine for the birds, but they're quite bitter. But a tip I learned during the week, when you're picking your blackberries, how do you know when the blackberry is ripe? So you pull one off the bush and you have a look on the inside of the berry, and if it's still white, bring it home and cook with it. But if it's purple on the inside as well as on the outside, it's at its maximum sweetness. Pop it into your mouth.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Now, we've reached the ad break already. But
well,
you want to talk about
jam
the jam
there if you want to try some jam.
That
and that's bread. I actually made bread this morning. I was incredibly productive.
And how much of the jam did you make? Do you make it kind of en masse when you're making up the jam?
Yeah, I made, I suppose, a kilo of blackcurrants, or blackberries, sorry. Still back in
but the... But I've always thought, like, if you're going to the trouble of making the jam, you might as well get a few jars out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you do. I know I saw a recipe for using... blackberry, apple and geranium leaf. I saw that in a Ballymaloe book and stuff. Oh. That might work, actually. Now, I didn't try it, but it's an idea. So there you go.
Oh, that is lovely jam. Mm. That is really, really tasty. That's an enormous jar as well.
It is. That'll keep us going for quite a while, actually.
Wow. Oh, that's not for me to bring home. Oh,
oh
right.
It is,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah, sorry,
fine.
It
yeah,
is.
Okay.
You can have a bun and the jam.
And people can probably hear you shaking your head saying, no, you're bringing it home with you. So blackberries, this time of the year, it's time to... and do you remember that Seamus Heaney poem,
yes,
the blackberry picking?
I do.
I tell you, after the ad break, we might try and find Seamus Heaney's poem, the blackberry picking, and we'll
it's
come back with that.
It's a lovely poem.
It is, it's lovely.
Yeah.
But we better take an ad break, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Blackberry picking. Late August, given heavy rain and sun for a full week, the blackberries would ripen. At first, just one, a glossy purple clot, among others, red, green, hard as a nut. You ate that first one, and its flesh was sweet like thickened wine. Summer's blood was in it, leaving stains upon the tongue and lust for picking. Then red ones inked up, and that hunger sent us out with milk cans, pea tins, jam pots, where briars scratched and wet grass bleached our boots. Round hay fields, cornfields and potato drills, we trekked and picked until the cans were full, until the tinkling bottom had been covered with green ones, and on top, big dark blobs burned like a plate of eyes. Our hands were peppered with thorn pricks, our palms sticky as bluebeards. We hoarded the fresh berries in the byre, but when the bath was filled, we found a fur, a rat-grey fungus, glutting on our cash. The juice was stinking too. Once off the bush, the fruit fermented. The sweet flesh would turn sour. I always felt like crying. It wasn't fair that all the lovely canfuls smelt of rot. Each year, I hoped they'd keep. Knew they would not.
I absolutely love that poem, and I love listening to him read his own poetry. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
I follow him on Twitter, so I get like
the Twitter.
I saw it this morning, actually, well, a little part of it and stuff. But I love reading just a little bit of poetry, like most days.
So that was Blackberry Picking by Seamus Heaney. Now there is a new garden festival which begins next week on the 26th. In Cork. It's the first annual Voxpro Urban Garden Festival, and it's going to be taking place at Voxpro's Campus 1 HQ in Mahon. And it kicks off at 11 and runs until 6, and the festival has a theme of kind of self-sufficiency in smaller urban spaces. And on the line, best known for her RTE appearances in How to Create a Garden and on Gary Glass on TG Carr, we have Kitty Scully, and she's head of horticulture in Voxpro in Cork. And there the team share their enthusiasm for the production and consumption of local seasonal homegrown veg. Kitty, how are you?
Not too bad at all, Frances. I'm here giving a feed to some kales now in advance of our festival next weekend.
Have them just looking good.
Have them looking good. Tip top now for the public. And just praying to God we don't get a big storm or a wind in between that'll blow the garden to pieces. But
it is that time of the year, really, isn't it? You just don't know what's going to happen outside with the weather.
And after the season we've had between storms and beasts from the east and heat waves, who knows what you can get? But look, at I suppose that's what it's about, and that's what connects us with nature, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it really
it's about the change, and that's what we're hoping to celebrate next weekend.
I've always thought, when I look back at my childhood, and summers were really, really hot and winters were really, really cold, they can't have all been like that. And I think it's only because I wasn't out there every day doing something. But since I became a gardener, I'm much more in tune with the changes in the weather.
Oh, totally. Like, I used to laugh. So I grew up in Leash, so I'm kind of wouldn't be too far from Kilkenny. And my dad was always a farmer, obsessed with the weather, and I just couldn't understand it as a child. And I always say, you know, you're getting that little bit older and more mature when you're crazily following the weather forecast to see what's ahead. So it definitely, yeah, weather and gardening, they sure do go hand in hand, you know. You really begin to notice it a lot more.
And you'll be paying attention between now and Sunday week, so that's the 26th, when the public descend on the garden there and they want to have a look to see what you've been up to.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I suppose not only find out what we're up to here in Cork City, but just to kind of share all the great urban garden stories and to invite people like yourself and from all over the country to come and just kind of enthuse about what can happen in a small space. And I really think, I suppose, for me, taking over this job a year ago and finding myself in a very urban environment with an audience who are all in their 20s, who don't have big sprawling gardens, few barely have windowsills. So it kind of was the whole inspiration that there really is like a real interest in food and farming and growing and sustainability in urban situations, but they don't have the access to the land. So it just kind of felt, it just felt right to kind of bring a gathering together, to bring horticulture to a new audience, really.
And it is, from social media I can see, it is very, very trendy to grow your own food now, among, you know, the millennials and the 20-somethings and the early 30-somethings. Oh, we seem to have lost Kitty there, have we? That's very unfortunate. The line's just gone down to Kitty there. But that was Kitty Scully, a head gardener, our head of horticulture at Vox Pro in Cork. And they're running the first annual Urban Garden Festival, which is growing in a small space, self-sufficiency in smaller urban spaces. And that's in Campus 1 HQ in Mahon in Cork next week. It's €375 in. Children under 12s are free with an accompanying adult. And you can get tickets on eventbrite.ie, or I'm sure you can pay at the event itself. There's a number of demonstrations. There's artisan food producers. There's going to be plant sellers there, master gardeners like Kitty and others, children's entertainment, live music, food, plenty of food available, and there's even going to be a Viking reenactment apparently there. And I'll be hosting some of the talks and demonstrations on the day. So in the main tent we'll have some speakers, some smallholder speakers there talking about keeping pigs and keeping sheep and keeping alpacas, and some smallholder stories from scratch. Bit of another smallholders gathering down in Cork next week in Mahon at Vox Pro's HQ. You're going to be busy next week, though. You won't be down at that. Now, one of the other things we want to talk about, you have some beetroot in your basket.
I do, yes, I do. Picked beetroot this morning. And
plenty of it available at the moment.
Yeah, it's good, actually. These leaves are kind of gone a little bit too large to use in a salad and stuff. The nice young leaves are great for a salad. And I would have picked a few as we went along in the last couple of weeks and stuff. But you know what I'm going to do with these, actually? Because kids wouldn't be mad into like beetroot salad, which we've had lots of, is make beetroot crisps.
Oh, very good,
yeah.
Very good.
So you just need to peel them and then use a mandolin or something to slice them really thinly. You need to dry them out. So leave them on some kitchen paper for a couple of hours and stuff until they're quite dry. And then just fry them in some oil.
Oh.
And then nice bit of salt on top and stuff, and you've got beetroot crisps.
I've seen those bagged up and available for sale in Glossary and Goodies,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, for quite a lot of money
not
and stuff.
Cheap.
And
not
no,
cheap.
No, not cheap, but they're really easy to make and stuff. So that's where these ones are destined for.
One of my favourite vegetable is the beetroot, if you get it nice and small and young like that. And the leaves you can use in stir fry or noodle dishes or any of that.
The stalks, actually. And the stalks and the leaves are probably the most nutritious part of it. Good source of iron. Apparently good to lower blood pressure. I don't know if you needed to do that. Iron, folic acid, something else, vitamin C as well, I suppose. But the stalks and the leaves have got the most. So I'd use the stalks in like stir fry, or if you're cooking baking fish and you want to put like some veg underneath or something like that, use a couple of those. They work quite well and they look nice colour in that.
I love roast beetroot itself as a roast veg, but what I found is if I'm roasting it, I roast it separately to any other veg, because if you put a bit of a mixed kind of roast veg into the same dish, everything just looks like beetroot at the end of it. It kind of bleeds all over absolutely all.
Well, it looks really nice if you've got a few different varieties in that, you know, some of the paler colours and some of the little rings and stuff, and then you roast all those together. They do look very nice, actually.
Mooncoin beetroot, the lads down in Mooncoin do a fantastic variety of beetroots down there, and it's their biggest seller now to restaurants. A lot of the chefs love the kind of golf ball size beetroots. Really, really popular.
So that's a little bit of maple syrup sometimes on roasting is quite nice. Just tiny bit.
I seem to remember you saying that before. And
yes, I
meant to try it and I never did. I completely forgot all about it. But I will the next time. The next time I'm roasting them, I will. Now, there's a story that caught my attention during the week, and it what you'd think of would be a good news story, but there is a bit of a twist in the tale. So apparently over the last few years in the UK, and I'm sure it's kind of similar here, free-range eggs, the growth in the market for free-range eggs, they've been going up 10% per annum. So more and more people switching to free-range, which is fantastic. But in the first year of 2018, for the first time ever, 51%, so over half of all the eggs sold to consumers in the UK are from free-range sources.
Labelled free-range.
Yeah. So that's fewer and fewer of the battery hens and more hens getting at least access to the outside. But it seems that the free-range industry themselves aren't particularly happy. So they're afraid that maybe there's more and more suppliers getting into the market and they're producing more free-range eggs than the consumer would like. And because there's more available, prices have actually been dropping. So that's nice for the consumer, you get cheaper food, but it's now gotten to the stage where it's actually for each egg that's being produced, the farmer is making a loss again. So there's another sector of farming where the cost of production is actually higher than the cost of return, or the return that the farmer is getting.
Wow.
So while they rely on us to pay a little bit more and use our conscience maybe to help us make the decision to go free range, the supermarkets are just in an never-ending kind of battle for low prices.
I have noticed there's quite a lot of small-scale egg producers here who are not selling to supermarkets. They're selling independently in all sorts of ways. Markets. My neighbour has a stall at the end of his gate and they sell out all the time. Sell to country markets, sell to kind of artisan-y shops and that. So maybe they're getting better prices doing that. I'm sure they are. But like, it's €2 for six eggs. It's not a lot of money if you think about what you could do with six eggs.
It's true.
So, and they're like of good quality eggs.
I know Magner's Farm over in Tipperary, where two of my alpacas went to live. And they look very happy over there defending the free range flock. And they sell direct to markets and direct to kind of little local shops and sell direct themselves at the farm gate. And as we always say, if you're able to support local, do so.
Yes.
It's the way to go. But one of the things that's been, one of the things I noticed as I was reading this story is that the supermarkets in the UK have all committed to getting rid of the caged eggs, so the kind of battery produced eggs, by the year 2025, which is another 7 years of torture for those poor creatures. And most people kind of thought that they were going to move to the free range standard once that happened. But it doesn't seem that that's going to be the case. They're going to go to what's called the barn system, where, okay, you're out of the cage, but there's still thousands of you.
You have to read labels so carefully.
You know,
outdoor bred, outdoor reared. That means they were born outside and then put in a shed afterwards.
Yeah,
they were left outside for, like, it's...
It seems to me that we're a bit behind the UK in a lot of things, and in the cynicism in food production, thankfully, I think we are still a bit behind them, because there seems to be the large producers over there seem to be going out of their way to hoodwink the consumer.
Yes, absolutely.
So the red tractor symbol and fake farm names in news in supermarkets and all of that kind of stuff, it seems to be much more rampant over there, because generally the British population have always been known as kind of animal lovers, you know, and I'm sure if they were to see the condition most of these poor creatures were kept in, they wouldn't go for
it. But I think people can be animal lovers and they still want cheap food, and you just need to, like, use your money.
Yeah, it's true. So that was just one of the food stories that caught my eye today, and it could really lead us on to a whole long discussion about cheap food, but maybe we'll leave that for another day because we're racing through stuff here. There was another thing that I saw. How are your bees?
Good.
Yeah.
They're still buzzing.
Still buzzing.
I actually need to go into them. I really need to go into them.
Well, it's getting close to the time now where we need to start looking after the bees for winter time and getting the hives ready to overwinter. So, and of course to harvest some of the honey if there's any honey there for harvesting if you're into that. I know some people keep bees and the beehives and never take any honey from them at all. They leave the honey to the bees.
I want to take honey actually. I'm kind of running low on what it took the last time. So.
Well, it's a super year for it. I was talking to Paul, who's the chairman of the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association the other day, and he was saying that it's probably his biggest production year ever.
Oh, good.
But he's developed an allergy to either to bee stings or something that's in his own honey because for the very first time ever, and he's been keeping bees for years, he had a reaction where he puffed up and his eyes all closed and all of that kind of stuff. So he's a little bit worried now about what's going to happen for him and his honey production because he has an awful lot of hives and produces an awful lot of honey. That's available in glossary and goodies to buy. But there is a new scheme in the UK. The British Beekeeping Association have introduced an adopt a beehive plan, and the idea there is that participants who don't want to get their hands all sticky but like the idea of kind of supporting beekeepers and like the idea of helping bees and their kind of populations, they can pay a kind of sign up fee. It's in the UK it's £36. They then pick an area that's near them, pick a beekeeper that's near them. So they identify roughly where their beehive that they've adopted is. And for their £36, they get a jar of honey, a pocket guide to the honeybee, a packet of pollinator-friendly wildflower seeds, Burt's Bees lip balm. They get three newsletters or three updates from the hive every year, as well as a copy of the newsletter from the British Beekeeping Association. So they kind of have a little bit of ownership of one of the hives that's nearby.
Well, can I tell you this story?
Yes.
And this is a Tipperary person, of course, and stuff. I was at a dinner not that long ago, and it was all foodies. And I was talking to a lady called Alva Gerard, and she has a bee, what's it called, a hive share business.
Very good.
And she sells, and I did check her out today and stuff, but she sells a share in the hive for the year. Now it's not cheap and stuff. She said a lot of people buy it for wedding presents and that, which is a nice present.
Yeah.
And you get so much honey, you know, from the hive. You get to go down and visit, and then you get some of the wax in candle form, and you're given newsletters, and so you have your hive for the year and stuff. So that's quite nice.
That is a lovely
scheme. It's clever, isn't it?
A lovely scheme. And we kind of kicked off something similar last year where I was managing a few hives over at your place and near you and so on for other people. And it's...
Did I give you honey for it?
the other hive owner did in return for my tuition and so on. I got something back from that person. They were nice. But it is a nice way of kind of, you know, encouraging or supporting the beekeeper because it's an expensive hobby. Like, bees are expensive. The equipment is expensive. It's very expensive in terms of your time. And it's nice if somebody kind of like shares that burden with you and then they get the honey in return and they don't have to do any of the work.
And it's a lovely idea. Like, you run out of, you know, wedding present ideas and stuff. I think it's a really cool kind of present,
yes,
isn't it? For
so
someone who wants the honey but doesn't want to do the work.
A beehive. Yes.
Yeah.
So find a beekeeper that's near you and get them to do a bit of a hive share with you. Now, we better take another ad break. And coming up after the ad break, we have all of those jobs for people to do in the garden. And Mags, you're taking us away at the end of the show today for a bit of music.
Yes.
Calm music in Butler Gardens. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782. You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. And you can email the show at any stage during the week. And I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live every Friday from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. And as well as emailing, you can send us in a question by text to 086 353 7782. And somebody has got in touch, no name on this one, but they're inquiring about the Adopt a Beehive, and is there an Irish scheme? I don't think there is.
No,
not that I've seen. Not
no.
An official one.
The lady in Tipperary is Brookfield.farm.com, I think.
Brookfieldfarm.com, is it?
Yeah, no, it's at Brookfield Farm, brookfield.farm, but just up Brookfield, maybe that's it, near Terry Glass, just north of Nina.
Okay, or get in touch with a local beekeeping association, and I'm sure a member there will gladly share one of their hives with you. Before we leave food alone, I know you want, we're on Nature Notes this week, we're going to be talking about a common visitor to the gardener. To the garden, the blackbird. But before we do that, it's the last chance now to vote for Kilkenny in the final of the Foodie Destinations competition that's run by the Restaurants Association of Ireland. So what we need you to do is to go on to foodiedestinations.ie and pick Kilkenny, and all you need to do is put in your name and email address and click submit, and that will give Kilkenny a vote in this year's competition up against 9 other parts of Ireland, all with great food cultures. But it would be nice to get Kilkenny voted the foodie destination of the year this year, because as we've said before, I think we've come second or third for 6 years in a row now, so it'd be nice to win.
It would indeed.
Now, the blackbird, one of my favourite birds in the garden.
Yeah, why is it one of your favourites?
When I was very, very young, I came out of the library in Raheny in Dublin, and I saw this blackbird with a bright orange beak, and I thought it was the most exotic thing I had ever seen. One of my earliest memories. This, it was just a bright orange beak. Oh my, this must be something so rare. I went back into the library, and it was the first time I ever did a bit of research, grabbed a book on birds, looked it up, expecting to see something escaped from a cage or something visiting from the abroad, and it was a blackbird.
Oh.
Yeah, a bit disappointing, but I've never forgotten.
Well, do you know how many of them there are in the country?
No.
Like, you'd guess quite a lot and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they reckon about 1,800,000 breeding pairs.
My God.
So that's a lot. So they're in most gardens, really. Like 98% of gardens would have a blackbird or two.
There's almost a blackbird for every human. That's incredible.
Yeah, I suppose. The males are black with the orange beak, and they kind of have a little eye ring, you'll notice as well. And then the females are kind of a dark brown, and their beak is dark brown as well. And the young are kind of a nice speckled. And you kind of take them for granted because they're always there and they're everywhere in that. But they do have a few kind of... they're not big flyers, but they kind of fly short distances and always in a straight line. But you know, when they land, they'll drop their wings and kind of they lift their tail up in the air.
Yeah.
That is very blackbird. And even if you didn't know what the bird was, you'd know it was a blackbird. That's one of their characteristics.
It's like an air break. They like to arrive with a flourish.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm here now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of cute though, isn't it?
I generally see them and hear their alarm calls as they run away from one of my fruit bushes, because they do love to eat the soft fruits.
Yes, they do.
And in underneath, and then you'd hear that as he flies away.
They did finish off my blackcurrants, actually, but that's okay. And have you ever seen a kind of an albino or a partial albino blackbird?
I never have. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Actually, there's always one near an October, near the railway line. I've seen one there like many times over the last couple of years.
Not that I've noticed.
It's kind of black and white. Mm. The shape of a blackbird. I remember the first time I saw it going, what is that? Shape and size of a blackbird, but with some white. So it's kind of partial albino.
Oh.
And they're not unusual. So you do see them every now and then. And as you would imagine, they eat like insects and earthworms, and fruit and berries. So they're kind of omnivores, I suppose. And I actually noticed them in the last couple of weeks, particularly when I was thinking about a hedgerow has been cut, but there's blackbirds flying across little roads and stuff with worms in their mouth, clearly going to young in the hedge. And that was into early August. So I think they've made a serious mistake with the Heritage Bill. But anyway...
We have mentioned that a couple of times
before. We have, but I think it
doesn't make it any better.
Yep. No, it doesn't, and I think it needs to be kind of reminded. People need to be reminded of it. They nest kind of mid-March to mid-June, and they'll generally have two broods, and the female will always build a nest, kind of a nice soft nest, really, and stuff of kind of moss and leaves and little branches and that. And you'll know the eggs. You know, they're that beautiful blue colour, and on the broad end of the egg, you've got a little kind of splatter of speckles.
Yeah. They are beautiful.
They're beautiful eggs. Yeah.
Beautiful.
And every year you'll spot a few that have dropped out of a nest somewhere and stuff and have landed on the ground.
Or even if they're broken, you know, after they've hatched underneath the hedge.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
They're gorgeous.
Beautiful,
a beautiful colour. So they should, you know, there's always chat about duck egg blue, that colour and stuff. There should be a blackbird blue egg colour, really.
And a cosy looking nest as well. So if you see any of the abandoned nests on the inside, it's lined with the warmest material. material they can get. So in my place, there's alpaca fleece
and sheep wool
and all
dog
sorts.
Dog hair as well. The incubation takes about 15 days, and then the little young hatch, another 2 weeks then before they'll actually fledge.
Oh, lovely, lovely
common
creatures.
Common garden bird.
A common garden thief, or bird, right. I mean, yes. But if you keep soft fruit, you'll be well used to the blackbird because they'll be in underneath the fruit bushes nicking your berries all the time. Now, we need to go to, no time for jobs this week, need to go to listen to some music in the garden with Mags.
I've just come into the garden in Butler House, just in time for a secret garden music performance. There's a number of these performances on in here, at the Rose Garden at the Castle and Roth House this week. There's maybe three performances on some days, all free, and the artists that perform are, a lot of them are performing at other bigger events during the week. But then they do these little small little concerts in gardens, which is just like, well, these are beautiful gardens, so having music as an addition is absolutely fabulous. The rain has cleared now and everybody is sitting on the stones around the circle and kind of standing under the trees. Beautiful setting, everybody gathering around the lily pond. It's incredibly peaceful, a nice place to go for a little relax in the middle of the day. The artists that are performing today are Liz Knowles, who's on violin, and Dennis Cahill, or Cahill, because he's from America, on guitar. And now I'm going to actually stay quiet so that you can listen to the music.
Oh, Max, that sounded lovely. So that was in Butler House Garden?
Butler House at the Stone Circle. That was a 3 o'clock performance, and then there was another one. I know Martin Hayes. Martin Hayes played at the next session at the 4 o'clock one yesterday with that chap Dennis Cahill.
Martin Hayes and Dennis Cahill are world famous. I mean, you would see them in like any of the big concert halls in New York, London, whatever. I've seen them in Sydney, Australia. They are world famous musicians. Fantastic musicians.
They're just literally, you can just wander in and sit down or stand and listen to it. Like, it was really lovely.
The sound of kids running around. But I love that about the art festival and the fringe events that are on as well. There are free events there. So even if you don't have a whole pile of cash, if you have the time, you're able to go along and see some of these things.
Yeah, there's someone tomorrow. There's one on at 4 o'clock tomorrow in the Rose Garden at the castle. And then the arts festival is near. It's like, it's 10 days, but it seems to always fly. Dying to catch up with a few things at the end. And there's lovely exhibitions in Butler House as well, actually. Made in Kilkenny, so it's like there's so many things worth going to.
The stone circle you mentioned in the garden of Butler House, now somebody may correct me, but I think those lumps of stone are part of the old original Abbey Theatre that were brought in and left there, and people now just use as benches.
I don't know, but they look perfectly, and they're around the lily pond and stuff. It's very picturesque.
And were the musicians in the little gazebo?
No, they weren't actually. They were sitting on one of the stones, and then everyone was just guarded. It was very kind of casual. They're just sitting almost in the crowd. There's no mics or anything like that.
Very intimate
with like super musicians just there beside you.
Like world famous musicians, and all for free. That was lovely.
Yeah,
really nice. I'm sorry I missed some of those, but like you said, there are some more still going on. It's a busy time of the year with festivals and stuff. It's incredible, all over the country there's stuff to do. So we were talking to Kitty earlier on about the Vox Pro Festival, which is on in Cork next Sunday, so that's Sunday the 26th from 11 to 6 in Mahon. There's also, last week we were talking to Matthew Jebb about the Totally Terrific Tomato Festival, which is on in this weekend, so that's this Sunday 19th in the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin. I'm looking forward to that, bringing the kids along to that, and you can see details of that on facebook.com/ Totally Terrific Tomato Festival. But you can't escape the jobs, all of the jobs.
Just get a woofer. Get a woofer.
Either you or your woofer.
Get a woofer.
Either you or your woofer have stuff to be doing outside. But you've a bread class on this weekend as well.
Tomorrow, yeah. I'm under pressure. I'm feeling actually under pressure. I have a lot on at the moment.
And are there places left in the class?
Well, there's always one that cancels in the week running up to it. So I had one cancellation during the week. So there's one place there. I'd love to have somebody if they want to come along.
Okay, and details are on facebook.com/ Hedgehog Bakery.
Hedgehog Bakery, yeah.
I had a great one during the week where I filled the butchery class, the introduction to butchery class that we're doing on the 27th of October. So that's over the Savour weekend here in Kilkenny, Saturday the 27th. I filled it and then had a chat with the butchers and decided we'd run a second day on the Sunday, on the 28th. And as soon as I put up the date on the 28th, a guy got in touch with me. He said, brilliant, because my friends were doing it on the 27th, but it was full. I couldn't get in. So now they all want to move to the 28th. So the one that was full is now empty. Well, it's not empty, but there's spaces in it again. It's just, I couldn't say no.
No, I know.
Now I've sent out messages to people saying, sorry, the 27th is full, and now I have to get back to them saying,
we actually have
spaces now.
Duh. I know.
Anyway, jobs to do in the garden this year. I like this time of the year in the garden. It's not too hot. You can just be munching the whole time as you go around. I had my only green gauge yesterday, one green gauge on the tree this year. But at least I got it before the wasps did. I had some figs, which I meant to bring you in a fig. Did you enjoy the fig that I meant to bring you in? It's lovely, isn't it? Excellent. Some figs ripe this week. I saw figs for sale yesterday for $1.25 each.
Why didn't you buy me one?
$1.25. I have them on my fig tree in the greenhouse. But you need to have it in the greenhouse. But they're... I love working in the garden.
No, there's a fig tree I saw in Bennett's Bridge, actually, on my way in and stuff. And it's full of figs. And it's outside.
But... will they ever ripen?
I don't know.
Yeah, they get to the green stage.
But I might actually get a fig there.
I have figs outside as well, and they'll get green, but in the 5 years that I've been paying attention to it, I think I've only ever had one ripe fig outside.
Okay.
They stay kind of hard. Maybe it's okay for cooking, I don't know. But the ones in the greenhouse, as soon as I move the tree into the greenhouse, I get lots and lots of them every year now. They're really lovely. But as you wander around the garden doing your jobs, you can kind of be munching on, I still have some of the blackcurrants and plums, you might get some plums and all of that. I love it.
Yeah, I munch the peas actually. And I actually like them before the peas start to develop in the pods, just kind of as munch too.
So do the kids. None of them ever get to the house. The only thing I grow that I never get to have for my dinner is peas. They just never make it back to the house, so I have to pick another veg on the way. But it is kind of blighty weather, so if the weather picks up, if you haven't taken your spuds out of the ground, and a lot of them won't be ready yet, keep an eye on the spuds and your tomatoes, and spray for blight if you need it with copper sulfate. If you've been growing wildflower meadows or wildflowers, now's the time to kind of either save the seeds or scatter the seeds. So you can mow your wildflower meadow now, and all you're really doing is kind of spreading the seeds and kind of getting it ready for next year. In the greenhouse, there's a few jobs to be doing. So you want to be taking some of the leaves off the grapevines, and the lower down leaves you want to be taking off the tomato vines as well to help the fruit to ripen. So what I generally do with the tomato plants is I take the leaves off all the way up to the first, the first tomatoes that are ripening. And as the year progresses, so between now and the end of September, just keep going up, removing leaves off the plant, and it'll help the tomatoes to ripen. And similarly with the grapes, and I've so many grapes on the vines in the greenhouse at Crowan this year, but unfortunately some of the white ones have powdery mildew, and I'm not going to spray, because they're going to go into my mouth, and I don't want to spray the whole thing, so I'll just have to lose some of them to powdery mildew, I'm afraid.
Why do they get that?
They get it in the vineyards as well. It's just, it's a fungus that just loves to grow on grapes. You can control it with copper sulfate again and stuff like that. But when they've started to produce the fruit already, I don't. I just forsake some of them. Now, the tomatoes and the cucumbers and the chilies, they'll all, of course, need plenty of feed and harvesting to encourage more fruit to come along. So don't be afraid to pick your chilies and stuff like that. It'll cause them to put out more flowers. And I'm feeding mine at the moment with some seaweed this week, and then back to the normal tomato feed. I like to give them a bit of seaweed once a month. I think it gives them a great boost. Don't forget to harvest. And then we might talk about some green manure next week, will we? Because it's time, like there will be bare spots of ground now, and it's time to fill those up. So that you're not leaving bare soil over the winter. So we'll talk about some green manures next week. But that is pretty much it. We've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week, and we hope that you have enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with myself and Mags during the week on Twitter. I'm at NesbittF and Mags is at Mags Morrissey. Or you can email kitchengarden@crkc.ie.